Here I am. Yes, indeed. Lynn McTaggart's coming up in a moment. First, a quick note. I get all of these questions on Fast Blast. Everybody wants to know about our cats. Well, our cats will be here in about a week. They're actually going to make their way through Europe. They go all the way around. They're going to go to Europe, and then they'll fly here. And so our two cats, Abby Dose, Yeti, and our Philippine adoptee, Dolly, will all fly here, I might add, at a cost about, you know, it costs double, if not almost triple, to fly cats from point A to point B. Yes, it's all the way across the world, other side of the world, but it really is extremely expensive. So anyway, they fly in about a week. Now, Lynn McTaggart began work on The Field 4 years ago. It was a personal quest. Her research took her to several areas around the globe, meeting with top frontier scientists in Russia, Germany, France, England, South America, Central America, and the USA. During these meetings, she saw what these scientists were working on, and it seemed to overthrow the current laws of biology, chemistry, and physics. Their theories and experiments also compounded into a new science, a new view of the world, if you will. For several years, she immersed herself in quantum physics and pored through hundreds of scientific papers to decode what was often simply impossible to do. In many cases, she had to pester the scientists to explain aspects of physics in order to check facts and interpretations. Lynn concludes that her work paints a picture of an interconnected universe and a new scientific theory which makes sense of all this supernatural phenomena that we talk about so often on this program. In a moment, Lynn McTaggart. Lynn McTaggart, welcome to Coast AM.
Hi there, Art. It's great to be back.
It's good to have you. Really is good to have you. You're really looking into a field that has my full attention, Lynn.
Well, that's fantastic, because I think the latest work that we've done is going to get everybody involved.
Okay. The field. You're calling it The Field. Why do you call it that?
Well, this is my work that I originally did that really took me into this whole area. I was looking at things like homeopathy and spiritual healing. And because I have a newsletter that looks at medical, called What Doctors Don't Tell You, that looks at all the medical information to see what works and what doesn't, I study scientific literature all the time. And I kept coming across these studies showing that this stuff really works. And I wondered to myself, well, if this is true, then something about the way that we work and the way the universe works must be beyond what current science says. And so it really set me on that quest around the world to find out what it was that could explain this phenomena. And the field actually stands for the zero-point field, which is a quantum field that unites everything like an invisible web.
All right, let's back up just a little bit. And you said you studied it and it works, as in healing. Can you give me what you consider the best evidence?
For healing, for mind over matter things.
Yes.
The fact that things, well, this is everything that I've been looking at since. And my new book, The Intention Experiment, looks at all of that, the power of intention. And one, there's just enormous evidence that I've come across. Mind has been able to affect everything from machines and single-celled organisms to complicated things like human beings. And there's just been enormous amount of evidence. This is what I have to laugh at when people say this, you know, the skeptics say this stuff isn't proven. It's just not true. There's just hundreds and hundreds of studies of all of this.
All right, let's say I don't believe it. Convince me. What do you know that convinced you that it really works?
The science of it. I started looking at the very frontier of science. After I published The Field, I felt I really needed to look into the whole idea of intention. And people were bandying it about so much that I thought, okay, well, let's find out what intention is. So I thought, well, I, again, being of a kind of a show-me personality, I really need to have science to convince me. I started looking at all the frontier science to see, okay, what evidence is there that consciousness affects matter out there? And I started looking at just what were the latest quantum physicists' view of physical reality? And there were two things that really convinced me. One is that big reality, the stuff that we see, the sticks and stones reality of our world, is not set, it's not final. They found in latest studies that even things like molecules are in a state of becoming. They're in a state of what physicists called superposition. In other words, they haven't collapsed into any one single state yet. There was that. And there's also the idea that living things are transmitters and receivers of information.
They I believe that.
We receive light all the time. So there's a little information transfer going on all the time between living things.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, I found what I thought was a perfect mechanism for intention. And then there's also a study showing that when someone sends a thought out there, it's received in all aspects of the receiver's body. That it affects their heart, their brain, their skin conductance, all sorts of things.
Okay. I guess what I'm asking for is you traveled extensively. I mean, you were in Russia. You were all over the place. I take it that you examined. There are people who claim they can heal.
Yes.
They claim they can heal either in person or even remotely can heal with intention. Now, what have you actually seen done?
Okay, I've seen studies, and first of all, I've seen intention masters, and I've talked to intention masters, and I've seen what they could do. I've seen evidence of qi masters, you know, qigong masters, being
yes.
able to throw people across a room with their thoughts. I've seen
really?
A video of that. I've seen evidence where. People, I've seen very, very good evidence that people on one part of America could send their thoughts to heal people on another part of America, and then that worked. I've seen evidence that people could calm down other people with their thoughts.
Lynn, have you actually followed it up, Lynn, with medical? For example, let's say somebody in New York heals somebody in California.
Yes.
And the person in California, I'm healed. Then do you follow it up to the extent that you get medical evidence that proves that it, you know, they were really healed?
I only look at published studies. I don't
okay.
look at sort of far-fetched views. For this book, I actually did talk to a lot of healing masters, and I interviewed them, but I did it in a scientific way. I did it through what they call phenomenological questionnaires, because again, I didn't want this to be just what you know the skeptics call woo-woo stuff. I wanted this to be solid science, because
right.
I felt that's what was really necessary. This is what people want. They want an underpinning of science. So these were all published studies that had been looked at by peer-reviewed journals. And so it means that a group of people skeptically look at all this data and have to look at the medical evidence, have to look at all the evidence. So it's all there. It's all been demonstrated, or it wouldn't have been published.
All right. Is there any sort of percentage you can give me or numbers that you can give me that would back this up? You've looked at studies that proved what? Proved that somebody could heal 60% of the time, 70% of the time, 10% of the time. In other words.
Okay, well, this is a really interesting question, Art, because I was actually wondering, you know, are there times when people can, you know, heal and sometimes when they're not very effective? And
mm-hmm.
there are actually studies showing that certain people, when people aren't well in every way, when a healer isn't well in every way, if he's not, you know, if he isn't healthy physically and also in a positive frame of mind, his healing doesn't work very well. Now, that was another interesting study. But in terms of percentages, I think it really depends on the intention master. There are some studies showing that prayer works, and I have problems with some of the big prayer studies that have been out now. There's some real problems with the way they've been set up.
I've been hearing that.
Some studies show, sorry?
I've been hearing that there are, a few problems with some of the stuff that's been supposedly solid science.
It hasn't, there's these kinds of studies need as careful examination as anything, and a lot of them weren't set up in a very scientific way at all. I mean, to give you one idea, they didn't give the people who were praying didn't even receive anything beyond the first name of the people they were praying for. Now, that's pretty basic. You're not even sure who this is being targeted to.
Right.
So there's things like that. There are big problems and big holes in all the prayer studies that I looked at. But in terms of effectiveness, I think the real important thing is that you'd say that intention works at a significant amount of time in all of these studies. So that's got to be beyond 50%. So 60%, 70%. Some of the studies show 80%.
Wow. Wow.
Some of the studies show that intention is probably the greatest drug developed in the world. That I think that for some of the more conservative studies of mind affecting machine, for instance, if you look at the effect size of that, it is about 10 times as good as the effectiveness of something like aspirin. And
okay.
Aspirin has been considered one of the greatest drugs of all time.
That's true. But Lynn, doctors know, they don't talk about it much, but they know that the placebo effect is gigantic. I forget what the percentages are. But if somebody you believe is a good physician hands you a sugar pill and tells you it will fix whatever you said was wrong with you, a very disturbingly high percentage of the time, it cures you.
Absolutely. And in fact, some of the latest studies I've found have shown that doctors know this, and they will, in many cases, prescribe a drug that is not going to really do something. It only has a tiny bit of active substance in there, just so they can convince themselves it's got something in there. But they're counting on the power of the mind to heal. And, the placebo effect is the greatest drug that we've got. The power of the mind works. I mean, there's an amazing couple of studies. One really incredible one where they did operations for arthritis, and they did regular operations on some of the people, and other people got a sham operation. In other words, they just opened up their knee and then closed it.
Wow.
And they found a year or so later that both groups claimed to be healed. The people that had nothing done got better. Other example of this, an example in Canada where they gave people with Parkinson's what they thought was dopamine, and it was just a sugar pill. And their brains started developing and producing dopamine. And
that's
amazing. In Parkinson's, this is the stuff that's lacking in the patients. So it's just the thought of it that works as well as any kind of active substance.
Okay. So when we get, for example, to a healer, somebody in California, and I'm going to get on the phone with them and tell them what's wrong, and they're going to send me vibrations to heal me, the big question is that person in California actually doing something for me, or is it me on the phone understanding that this is being sent to me, sending my own brain in motion to heal myself?
I think it's both. I think one of the things I was looking at for intention was, again, what happens in the receiver, what happens in the transmitter.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a subtle dance that's going on all the time. And that it's like a reorganization that's happening from the transmitter. And the belief of the receiver is also helping too. It's what they call in physics greater coherence. What some of the scientists I've talked to have believe is going on when somebody is ill is basically their frequencies are scrambled up, mm-hmm. and that living beings have the greatest kind of quantum organization found on the planet. It's called coherence. It means that all of the waves in their it means that energy waves are operating in tandem, almost like an orchestra where you've got individual players, but they're all contributing to this beautiful collective sound. And the view is that somebody who's ill is a little bit disorganized. In other words, that they're not quite so coherent. So the coherence of the healer is helping to restore that balance in the recipient. But the belief also has an effect as well in restoring coherence. So as I say, it's a kind of, there is information being generated, picked up and sent all the time. There's an antenna receiver is going on all the time. Information transfer between living things all the time at every moment. Every time we notice something, in a sense, we're sending an intention.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense to me. The central point of your book is that consciousness affects matter, correct?
Yes.
How do we actually set about, and I believe it, Lynn. I did some experiments here on the air that absolutely blew me away. I'm sure you do know about them, right?
Oh, I do, yes.
Okay, all right. So I know it's real. I just don't understand it. And I'm worried that lack of understanding, particularly when you're, you know, trying to manage millions of people out there toward one idea, could backfire, and I might not do the right thing. But I understand the power of directed consciousness. It's astounding.
Yes, absolutely. Well, it's a new paradigm. It's a new understanding, and as I say, what's being discovered right out there in physics, right out there on the frontiers, offers a paradigm where this works. The only reason that we think this is really strange is because we have this bizarre and old-fashioned view of the world that all of us are separate, mm-hmm. and that we are all separate, and that the human body and all sorts of things out there are a finalized assemblage. You know, that they can't be changed.
You have looked carefully at what's going on at Princeton, right? I hope.
I've looked carefully, yes, what's been going on all over the world. I mean, in terms of science. I mean, the Princeton people were fascinating because they set up, that's the PAIR group, the Princeton
right.
Engineering Anomalies Research Group. They set up this very scholarly program to measure whether or not consciousness could affect random event generators, which are a 21st century equivalent of a toss of a coin.
Mm-hmm.
And they are things that produce heads or tails pretty much 50% of the time when left to run on their own devices. And
mm-hmm.
usually they're like a computer screen, and they'll have alternating pictures of, say, cowboys and Indians. And the PAIR people asked all their volunteers, and there were, you know, thousands of them, to sit in front of these computers and to send their intentions to create more cowboys and Indians than on the screen, then to do the reverse, and then to try not to have an effect at all. And over hundreds and thousands of studies, they discovered that in a significant portion of the time, they could send that they would be affecting these machines out of their random course.
There's no question about it.
There's no question. Well, of course, there are skeptics who attack it, but the evidence compounds over these hundreds of thousands of studies is very persuasive to say that there are effects.
I agree with you. It's a new but not well understood power. Now, maybe you've come further down the road in understanding this power. We're approaching we've got so much to talk about. We're approaching a break, Lynn, so hold tight for a moment. This is exactly what I was hoping we'd be talking about tonight, and so it is. What we're talking about is real. It's not subjective. It's absolutely real. There are few things in this world that I absolutely believe in, but intention and the power to control, you bet I do. I'm Art Bell. I'm sure that one day science is going to understand and explain to us exactly what it is we're talking about tonight, why it works, how this information is transmitted from those with intention to the one who would be healed. Or, in a moment and after the break, I will explain how you can have intent, even, for example, cure yourself. We'll be right back. Well, okay, here we go. Lynn, I'm going to tell you something I do personally that one of my guests some years ago told me about, and I've tried it, and it works. Here it is, and you can tell me what I'm doing.
Okay.
The person told me, lie in bed, close your eyes, and try and picture a white light, and then bring it down and just wash it over your body as you're lying in bed with your eyes closed.
Mm-hmm.
And it works. Now, I don't know what it does, Lynn. Maybe it's the placebo effect. I have no idea, but it's my own intention, believing that if I bring down and wash my body in this light, white light, it will have a beneficial effect. And it seems to work. Now, what is that?
What it is I wanted to try to extrapolate from all of these different sources, both science and the master intenders, a program that people could use in their lives. Also for us to create for an experiment, and I'll get to that in a moment, because this is my book is actually an experiment as well as a book. But the point was, I wanted to get all these ideas. What do they all do in common? What makes you a better intender? And mm-hmm. one of the things that they all do is a thing I call powering up, which is they get their mind into a meditative state of some sort. And they use all kinds of different ways. Some healers do some things. People use rosary beads. They use mantras. They use anything like that to still the mind. And so for you, the white light was just a way to, it created a meditative state. And I think that's one of the first things that you need to do to get into a place where you can use your thoughts to maximum effect.
Okay. Well, that's all it is then. And everybody, or most everybody, can do it, right?
Most everybody can do it. But there are times, there are places. I mean, this is the other thing I was looking at, what other conditions help? And I found that even our relation to the planets, even certain geomagnetic times help. Using certain places again and again, there's been some evidence that the more you do intention in one place, the more it works. Stilling the mind is a really important thing, but also making your intention as specific as possible.
Mm-hmm.
Focusing on compassion. But a really interesting thing that I found, Art, was, everybody talks about calming down, and that the really important thing is to settle into what people call an alpha state, where your brain slows down.
Right.
And that was not what I found. One of the things I wanted to look at was what happens with people like monks. Buddhist monks are the biggest intent, they're master intenders. They're able to take their minds and bring their metabolism down by up to about 60%. And that should be impossible. Or they have been known to bring their temperature up by about 20 degrees.
My God.
There have been studies showing that when they wrap around freezing cold blankets around monks who are clad only in, like little loincloths, they've been able to steam dry those sheets with their thoughts. So I figured, well, these guys know what they're doing. So what happens with them? There have been some really interesting brain studies of these guys showing that when they are in a state of intention, their brains aren't slowing down. They are speeding up to what's called a gamma state, which is a state of utter peak attention. It's about the fastest brain, it's the fastest brain waves the human body has. So these are people in an absolute peak state of attention. So for ordinary folks like you and me, it's important for us to still the mind, to calm down. But eventually we want to get to a state of peak attention to really, really make these intentions count.
Okay. I had not heard that before. You always hear quiet the mind, go into a meditative state. But you're saying the real masters of this, while they do that, they then go into another state where their mind is extremely active on intent.
Absolutely. I mean, interesting studies of psychics, you know, the famous psychic and remote viewer Ingo Swann.
Yes.
He was studied as well while he was in the process of remote viewing. His brain was not in an alpha state of slow death. That's when your brainwaves are like light meditation or light dreaming. His brain's waves were up there in gamma as well. So he had moved into a state of peak attention. So what I tend to suggest for people is that they try to do things like mindfulness meditation, which is a mindful and just exquisite awareness of the present, everything that's going on, what your breathing feels like, mm-hmm. what the room smells like, just attending to every moment without judgment. And that helps you develop this state of peak attention.
Okay. You've looked at the studies of these people, or have you actually yourself ever studied these people, gone to these people?
Both. I conducted my own questionnaire with a lot of master intenders, and I also looked at hundreds and hundreds of studies all over the place in all kinds of areas to see what the science said and what the science said about people like this. Because now, I mean, monks are the favorites of the neuroscience lab. All sorts of places all around America and, in fact, the world are studying monks to see what this says about the human mind. And they found the studies that I'm talking about were done by Harvard's Herbert Benson, where he went out to Tibet and places like that and wired up monks to see what was going on in a body that could change, that could steam dry sheets and turn into the equivalent of a human furnace.
Yes.
And then there have been other studies where at the University of Wisconsin, where the Dalai Lama has flown in a bunch of his chief and experienced monks, and they've wired them up with EEG machines, you know, studying their brainwaves to see what happens. And those are the studies that showed they go into a gamma state. Mm-hmm. And it even surprised the researchers because they also thought the brain slows down during meditation. Well, for these intention masters, it doesn't. It speeds up.
Okay. All right. So we can measure the fact that the brains are going into this gamma state. We can measure that something unusual is happening with their brains. We can even verify that it really works. But we don't, I think, we do not understand how it works, do we?
How what works? How intention works?
How something is. I depend on science. I'm a ham radio operator. I understand how a radio signal gets from point A to point B,
mm-hmm.
but I don't understand how intention gets from point A to point B, and I don't think science yet understands that. It's probably in the quantum world somewhere, but we don't really know yet, do we?
Well, we do, Art. And that's what I've covered in my book. First of all, there's been some really interesting evidence done by Gary Schwartz. He was fascinated by those copper wall experiments done by Elmer Green, and these were studies showing that whenever a healer sends healing, that it gets recorded as electricity. There's an electrostatic charge that happens. And Green was able to measure this by putting these healers in a whole room that was a copper wall, you know, surrounded
right.
by copper walls.
Right.
And coppers is a great amplifier. And so he hooked up these copper walls to an EEG machine, which records you know, instead of recording brainwaves, he was recording any kind of charge that was coming out of these healers. And he found that this was, you know, any time they sent healing, this was going on. But Schwartz realized that Green was having a problem because any time these guys moved, they were also sending a charge. And so Schwartz thought, wow, this is the most interesting part of the data. Maybe every movement creates an electromagnetic signal that's picked up. And so he wondered whether or not human beings are transmitters of signals all the time. So he began playing around with these really fun studies where he would stick a EEG cap on a little bust of Einstein. And he would wave, he'd start waving his hand over it. And he also attached this to a copper wall so it would amplify it. And he'd show his students that every time he waved his hand over it, there would be a big recording on the equipment as though this bust of Einstein had a brainwave. And really what was going on was nothing to do with Einstein. It had to do with Schwartz's hand. Every time he was moving, he was creating a signal. Then he did other studies showing that anytime someone else did wave their hand, and he put his hand out, he'd also cause a signal. So he was like the conduit of the signal. And what was going on was he was realizing that every movement we make, everything we do, is transmitting energy.
All right, well, I can buy that, but an electrostatic measurement, I can buy that, but I cannot buy how an electrostatic charge of any sort can affect a person from one side of the world to the other.
Okay, well then we move into the quantum world with things like this. And we move to somebody like, excuse me, Fritz Albert Popp. Now, he is a German physicist who stumbled on the idea that living things emit tiny photons of light. We all dribble out a little tiny current of light all the time. Okay. And this is quantum information that's going on. And you know, with quantum information, there isn't measurable distance, that things can affect other things through a thing called non-locality.
Again, Einstein said spooky action at a distance. He didn't like it at all.
He didn't like it at all because it means, for anybody who doesn't know what it is out there, it means if you've got two quantum particles and they've been in contact one time, you can move one to Tokyo and the other to New York, they will always be in contact. It's kind of like twins being separated at birth. Mm-hmm. And if you move one, you move these two apart, they still like the same color. It's like they still marry the woman called Jane. They both marry a woman called Jane. And if you knock one down the stairs, the other one breaks his leg too.
Yeah, that's
right.
So
they're constantly affecting each other, no matter how far they're apart. And so within the quantum world, you can have this kind of non-local effect.
But you can't understand it, Lynn. It's true. Everything you just said is true. But how that quantum action occurs, apparently faster than the speed of light, without respect to distance, nobody knows.
Nobody knows why this happens, but we can say it does happen, and it does happen with living things.
That's right.
That we are transmitting and sending information all the time to each other. The other thing that's really interesting about this is some evidence that when you send a thought, that it's being picked up in every part of the receiver's body. There have been some really interesting studies at the Institute of Noetic Sciences called the Love Study, where they found that they had partners, one of whom had cancer, and the partner who was sending was the healthy partner. Mm-hmm. Every time he would send a healing thought, and they had them all monitored for everything, the recipient would receive this information by a correspondence in brain waves, in his heart waves, in his skin conductance, in different aspects of his body. And it demonstrated that anytime somebody sends that kind of a thought, it's picked up in the receiver.
Well, this is really weird stuff, Lynn, but it's true. I know it's true. I just wish I could understand it, but...
Well, I think you have to think about a thought as a thing. And a thought that a thing is, it's a physical thing that affects other things. And it is like this current of light, a thought like everything else coming out of us is a current of light.
All right, we're going to have to settle for it's true, but we don't know how it works. Someday science may find out how it works. I'd love that. Maybe not in my lifetime. In the meantime, I guess all we can do is figure out how to manipulate it, how best to use it to our benefit.
Well, that is really what we're looking at. I mean, the book, what I have tried to do with the book is not only put this stuff together, but test it. And that's the real purpose of the book, is the book is a global laboratory. I'm working with a number of scientists, and we're going to push the boat out and try to find out by using our readers and getting involved in sending out thoughts at the same time. So we're creating a giant group of intenders to see what happens when we all send the same thought at the same time.
God bless you. Good idea. Gary in Irvine, California, I get these little computer messages, asks a question that I also want an answer to, and it's simply this. Please ask Lynn if there are evil intention masters. Now, if this is a real power, like most powers, I would imagine that it could be used for good, healing, or evil.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've got a whole chapter about negative intention, because that's the first thing anyone asks is, okay, you know, how, you know, is it, what's more powerful, a positive thought or a negative thought? And how do I protect myself? Mm-hmm. And yes, there are loads of studies about this, because, and they mainly they've done it with things like bacteria and viruses. Mm-hmm. Because when you think about it, oftentimes, when you're trying to send visualization, let's say if you've got cancer, you're sending out a negative thought. All those visualizations that Carl Simonton did with his patients really basically said, think of your body as Pac-Man and imagine you're gobbling up your cancer cells.
That's right.
Well, that's a negative intention. It's trying to kill something. And that's what that kind of visualization is all the time. You kill your cancer in order to live. And yes, there's been lots of studies of Qigong masters and things showing that they can turn on positive intention and negative intention. And that negative intention is pretty powerful.
But you sort of did a it's negative, but it's positive kind of thing. Like I'm going to shrink and kill my cancer cells. Let's really get off into the negative territory. Let's talk about, for example, a witch. Now, there are women who claim that they can actually physically cause damage to a person. So instead of eating up the cancer cells, which is a sort of a negative thing, suppose somebody claims they can not only create but cause cancer to spread in a person. Let's really get negative here.
Well, there's, you know, Art, there's lots of evidence to show, as I say, with a lot of studies, that sending a negative thought is as powerful as sending a positive thought. And there's certainly been studies where they've measured with Qigong masters, they've had them alternately send a positive thought and then send a negative thought, and it's just as powerful. So, and there's that whole folklore about voodoo showing that, you know, lots of times pointing the bone at somebody. There have been certainly documented cases where people die from that. So I think, you know, I think that there's something in this. The studies I've seen have only tried positive voodoo. You know,
I'm really glad to hear you say that, because a lot of the woo-woo people say, oh, you can't do anything negative with this. It's only, you know, the universe only allows positive things to happen. And I just never bought that then, and I don't buy it now. So I think you're right.
No, it's absolutely true that negative thoughts have power. There have been plenty of studies. They're in my book about how negative thoughts can affect things just as much as positive thoughts. And certainly they found that in one study, it was hard for people to block it.
Hold it right there, Lynn. We have to pause here at the clock. I'm Art Bell.